Today is February 4th, 2017. We are up to Perek Chaf Beis, which is in the middle of Parshas Mishpatim. It also happens to be Erev Shabbos Parshas Mishpatim. So we're up to Halacha Day now. So over the course of many possibilities one may select from over Perek Chaf Beis, I'd like to discuss, obviously at a very superficial level this morning, and that is the prohibition of collecting on ribbons. The Pasuk tells us, Perek Chaf Beis Pasuk Chaf Dalet, and Kesef Talveh Esami, when you lend money to my people, Esani Imach, to a poor person who is with you, Lo Sia Lo Kinoshet, you shall not be with him as a creditor, Lo Sesimun Alav Nesha, and nor shall you put interest upon him. So the idea of Lo Sia Lo Kinoshet, you should not be a creditor, what is that referring to? So the Gemara says you can't ask somebody to pay you back when you know that he's not going to be able to pay you back. That's that prohibition. In fact, the Gemara even talks about that you're not even allowed to make yourself appear in front of a person who owes you money if he's not able to pay you back. Because of the difficulty he'll feel by the fact he's not able to pay you back. And that is obviously a very difficult thing to really understand. That idea, I mean, what if you borrow money from somebody in shul? So the guy who's the malva, not only is he not getting his money back, but he also has to take a hike and find another shul. Like, how exactly that plays out is not for today. But I want to discuss the last couple of words here. Lo sesimun alav neshach. You're not supposed to lay interest upon him. So the first question that one has to ask is, why not? Why not? That seems like it's a pretty reasonable thing. A person wants to borrow money. They want to start a business. They want to expand their business. They already have a lot of money. They just need some money plus interest. So, and they're willing to pay interest. They're very happy to do it. So why is that a problem? So the truth is, the prohibition of not lending on ribbons appears multiple times throughout the Torah. Here it talks about only with regards to a poor person. Other times it talks about a person. You have to recognize that he is your brother, etc., with you. So you lend money to your brother without charging him interest, even if they're trying to expand their business. So I think that there is a part of brotherhood that is supposed to exist here. So we'll maybe get to a ramification of that a little bit later on. But the general question of, is ribbis a moral issue, or is it a just a mitzvah? It's a mitzvah just like shaking the luos isn't a moral issue. It's a mitzvah that we have to do. On the other hand, thou shalt not murder is considered a moral issue. So is this moral or is it not? So perhaps some of the indicators, is it ben adam l'chaver or is it ben adam l'makom? Is it an obligation between man and man or between man and God? So perhaps the best indication that we assume that it is a mitzvah that is ben adam l'makom as opposed to ben adam l'chaver is it's where it appears in Shulchan Aruch. If you ask somebody, there's four sections of Shulchan Aruch. There's Or Chaim, daily law, there is Yoredeya, miscellaneous laws, that's the laws of Kashrus, the laws of Nida, the laws of Avelus, the laws of Avodah Zarah, all those things are all in Yoredeya, it's kind of miscellaneous. Eben Ezra is women's law, deals marriage and divorce, and Choshen Mishpat is monetary law. So where should the laws of ribbis appear? So the quick answer is what? Monetary law. That's what you would expect. In fact, in the Rambam, the halachos of ribbis of interest appear in Hilchos Malva Velova, the laws of loaning and getting money back, which it seems to be pretty reasonable. However, that is the when one gets to Shulchan Aruch. So in Shulchan Aruch, they're actually found in Yoredeya, in the middle, really smack in the middle of these miscellaneous laws. So why is it, A, there's a question of why it's in Yoredeya, and B, there's a question of why exactly it is where it is. The section, the subject right before Yoredeya is the halachos describing Yehoreg Val Yavor, the laws where a person has to give up their lives rather than to violate certain halachos and have to deal with the Avodah Zarah. That. So right after that comes the laws of ribbis. And immediately following the laws of ribbis are the prohibitions of magic and the prohibition of superstition and other halachos that distinguish us from being non-Jews. So why is this here? So it's a little difficult to understand. However, if you look at Siman Kufnun Tes, the very first Siman having to do with the laws of ribbis, so you get a little bit of an answer, because they're the law, the first law of ribbis, the first law of the laws dealing with interest having to, that are mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, is the halacha that you only have a prohibition of interest with Jews and no prohibition of dealing with interest when it comes to non-Jews. So that's the first halacha that's taught right off the bat. So then, if you look in the Torah, really the one responsible for putting the Shulchan Aruch in order is not the Shulchan Aruch himself, rather it's the Torah, because he based himself off of the Torah. Right? There is the Torah, he wrote a halacha book divided into four sections, he made up the four sections, he made up the order. It's not as rigorous as the as what Rav Yosef Karo did, that Rav Yosef Karo wrote his commentary to the Torah called the Beis Yosef, and then he wrote his summary of the Beis Yosef, which we call the Shulchan Aruch, but it's still based on the patterns of the Torah. So if you look in the Torah says in Siman Sukkot's Nun Tes is that you're allowed to do it with non-Jews, you're not allowed to do it with Jews. And the question of whether you're allowed to do it, what about a Jew who's totally not religious? And what about those details are taught in Kuf Nun Tes. And Siman Kuf Samach says, begins the Torah, Ribis, Hoel Va'asa Liyadon, Nemo Bei Milsa. Because Ribis has come into our hands, and we've now started dealing with the laws of interest, let me tell you a few more things about it. And then he goes on for another 20 simanim or so, talking about the laws of Ribis. It becomes a pretty thick section over there. So it's interesting, if you were to ask, so where does the laws of Ribis belong? So one could perhaps make a case that the Tur thought it belonged in Choshen Mishpat, right? The Tur thought it belonged someplace else. But the Torah said, alright, we're dealing with the laws of Jews and non-Jews, so we'll stick in the laws of Ribbis here because we mentioned something having to do with Ribbis. But there are other ramifications as to whether something is within Choshen Mishpat or Yerideya. Generally, things in Choshen Mishpat, one has the ability to be mochalan. One has the ability to forgive. If people have a monetary case, so generally a person can forgive the other one. Alright, fine, I'll be mochel, it's okay. Right, we have ways of resolving those issues. Ribbis, when one lends on Ribbis, there is a prohibition on the borrower, there's a prohibition on the lender, there's a prohibition on the lawyer, there's a prohibition on the guarantor. There's a lot of different issues that are going around there, and nobody has the right to be mochel, right? It's a problem for both sides. It's a problem for the lender, and it's a problem for the borrower. It's a problem for each one. They have the same issue that they have to deal with. So that generally makes us assume that it's more of a Yoredeya halacha than a Choshen Mishpat halacha. That's just the rules. The rules are as the rules are, and they're going to bind both the malva as well as the lova, both the borrower as well as the lender, and we have to figure out a way how to make our business matters run in accordance with the Torah itself. Okay, so that is kind of the introduction to the laws of Ribbis. Now, I just want to get, well, over our course this morning, I think we'll get, the way we'll work it is we'll give two leniencies. If there's time for something else, maybe we'll get into something else. But just two leniencies within the laws of Ribbis, but by way of understanding what those leniencies are, you understand a little bit better about what the laws of Ribbis are. So, oh, I forgot. I left it in the other room. I even brought it with me this morning. It's okay. So one of those halachos is a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva, and it's often not fully recognized what he said. So Rav Moshe Feinstein he was asked about banks. Can a bank run in accordance with the Torah? Right? That was the question. If a bank is constantly dealing in interest. In fact, if you think about it, when you deposit money into a bank, mm-hmm. right, the bank is paying you back with interest in theory. Right? So what does that make you? That makes you a lender, and it makes the bank a borrower. Mm-hmm. So I was actually listening to a shiur from Rabbi Reisman recently, where Rabbi Reisman made the point that it is possible to say, the Rambam seems to say, that lending to a non-Jew with interest is actually a mitzvah. You're actually supposed to lend to a non-Jew with interest. So he made the point, well, if that's the case, every time you go to a bank and make a deposit, you should say, Harini Muchan Umazun Lakai Mitzvah Sasei, I'm hereby fulfilling my positive mitzvah of lending to a non-Jew with Ribbis, because I'm hereby lending money to Wells Fargo, and Wells Fargo is going to give me back more than what I put in, right? So that's so if it's owned by a Jew, so then you have a bigger issue. Because, right, one side is Jewish, one side, and there are Jewish-owned banks. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva, and he actually, interestingly, in the beginning of it, begins by saying, I'm going to tell you a big chiddush now, but I hold it's 100% correct. I really hold this idea, and that is that banks are not really, any corporate entity is not really owned by anybody. Right. It's really owned by, it just exists. It exists as an entity. So even though the Jew owns that corporate entity, right, it's actually divorced from the Jew. So suggest for Moshe that every time, so let's say you lend, you're not lending to, you. So when you deposit money into, instead of Wells Fargo, we'll call it Strauss Cohn.
First Trust,
okay. First Trust owned by a Jew, says Bruce. So if you deposit money in them, so in theory you're the Malva, they're the Lova, right? You're the lender. And by the way, how do you remember which one is Malva is the borrower? Malva is the lender, Lova is the borrower. How do you remember which one is which? So one of my Rebbeim once pointed out, Malva has more letters and more money. Okay, that's how I still keep track of it today. Malva and Lova. Malva has more letters and more money. So the one who is depositing money in is Moshe Shmuel. Moshe Shmuel is depositing it into First Trust, and First Trust is becoming the Lova. They have to pay the money back, and they have to pay the money back with interest. Now, whoever owns First Trust, Mr. Goldberg, right? Mr. Goldberg.
Mr. Green.
Okay, so Mr. Green, in this case, right? Is he personally responsible to pay back? No. So it says Rav Moshe, technically he's not. Technically, he's not personally responsible to pay back. His corporation is responsible to pay back. So the prohibition of lending on interest is when you lend money to a Jew, and the Jew is personally responsible to give it back.
Right.
But if the Jew is not personally responsible to give it back, then that alleviates the prohibition of interest. So Moshe says, there you go, across the board, I've struck out half of the ribbis issues when it involves a company. Now, he hasn't struck out the other way. The other way, if First Trust, Mr. Green, as Len likes to say, is giving out a mortgage to Shmuel Yaakov, or Shmuel Moshe, whatever his name was, right? So then you got a problem, because you have a Jew, the Jew owns the corporate entity, right? They're lending money out to a Jew, and the Jew is personally responsible to give back. So Moshe explicitly says that that's a problem. That's from some people have the mistaken notion. Oh, Rav Moshe pretty much crossed out the entire laws of ribbis, because anytime you deal with a corporation, the lachas don't apply anymore. That's not what he did. It's only when the corporation is the borrower. Right. That's the problem that tshuva has solved. So is that? So does everybody agree to that? Well, people refer to it as Rav Moshe's heter. Rabbi Reisman, I was listening to on a shir. I haven't really dove into the heter iska, specific issue yet. But Reisman, I just listened to the shir that he gave. He made, he claimed that there are rishonim that hold this. That Rosh himself mentions one, but he says as well, there's some serious rishonim that suggest this idea that if it's shielded, if the person who borrowed the money is shielded from having to pay it back by some, you know, that he doesn't have what's called a shibud haguf. That's what Moshe discusses, of course, in his tshuva. Is the borrower have a shibud haguf? Is he personally responsible or is he not? So if you could create a situation where he's not personally responsible, so then you would alleviate that issue. So Moshe himself already, the Rishonim that suggests this, Ray Reisman made the point, and I didn't look up these sources yet, that he found, Ray Reisman wrote the book on Hilchos Ribbis, right? The Art Scroll Laws of Ribbis, the green, you might have seen it, Laws of Ribbis, he wrote that book, that's his sefer. So he said that he found this idea in a Tashbetz. Tashbetz is one of those, a pretty serious Rishon, quoted in the Beis Yosef. You got this farm here in the Beis Medrash here. But he said it's not quoted in the Beis Yosef. It's not, which isn't necessarily a proof. The Beis Yosef wasn't, Beis Yosef for Yosef Kara wasn't responsible to quote every sheet, every tshuva of every Rishon ever written. But he said what's interesting about this one is that the Beis Yosef quotes a different part of that tshuva that's totally unrelated. And when they wrote a letter, so he included five different halachos in it. So the Beis Yosef quotes part of it, he doesn't quote this. So does that then make it mean that the Beis Yosef didn't agree with it? Anyways, there's a question that that is out there. But anyways, Rav Moshe says you can rely on it. The Minchas Yitzchak is often quoted as saying that you can't rely on it. The Minchas Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Weiss, the Rav of the Bedatz, for many years, he has volumes of tshuvas, the Minchas Yitzchak. So he has a tshuva where he doesn't think that this alleviates the problem of interest, because if you think about it, let's say Len lends me money and says, okay, you know, you owe me $500 back. I say, okay, I'm not personally responsible to you. That's going to come out of the entity that includes my bonds, that'll come out of my assets rather than from me. I hereby bound up all my assets in order to pay you back your $150. So that's a little bit of a joke, right? You can't come after me, you can only go after my assets. Right? So that's a challenge.
Bank
so
levy.
What?
Called a bank levy.
Yeah. So that's a challenge to that tshuva. So the Minchas Yitzchak says that that Rav Moshe's suggestion, or which is really sourced in Rishonim, perhaps moves Ribbis down from an Issur D'Oraisa to an Issur D'Rabbanan. It goes down from biblical to rabbinic, but he holds it still an Issur D'Rabbanan. So Rabbi Reisman on this recording said, so I asked Rav Palm what he thought. Rav Palm was a Rosh Hashiva Torah Vidas. Rabbi Reisman is a Rebbe in Torah Vidas. Right? So he said, I asked him whether he suggests holding like Rav Moshe's idea. And he said, well, if we could rely on Rav Moshe to knock it down from a Din D'Oraisa to a Din D'Rabbanan, we could rely on him to and now we're only talking about Din D'Rabbanan. So okay, we have the right to be Makel on Din D'Rabbanan. So he has the right to be Makel based on that. That's his that's his idea. Yeah. Okay. So that is one of the big leniencies within the laws within the Ribbis world, right? That you can, if the borrower is a corporation, so that's a significant leniency. Now, it doesn't get you out of the problem of taking a mortgage out from Mr. Green.
Me
being the Loveth. Once I change to being the Loveth, so then I have a problem. Yeah.
Forgive me. Keep on forgetting.
Kosher
Mishnah and Yoredeya, which one?
Kosher Mishnah is monetary law, Yoredeya is miscellaneous law. But yet, for some reason, the laws of Ribbis are in Yoredeya.
You should be Kosher Mishnah, you think.
You would think in Kosher Mishnah.
Yeah, that I know.
Right, but it ended up being Yoredeya. Reason being, probably, because it was stuck in because he happened to be talking about one aspect of Ribbis, that's what the Torah seems to say, but most probably because it's really a ben adam lemakom halacha. It's really a halacha between men. You know, Hashem has said that this is the way you're going to have to run your businesses,
right.
And that's it. I mean, choshen mishpat is idea of robbing, stealing, damaging, punishing a business. When you're talking about business, so then you have the right to be mochel. Ribbis, you don't have the right to be mochel on. Right? Me as the lova, I can't say, oh, I'm mochel. I'll take it with interest. I'm not allowed to do that.
Okay, I get it.
Are we supposed to give our business to Jews first? I mean, if we can.
Sure.
So that gets us into
heter number two. Heter number two is very, very important. It's also very important to understand the details of how this works. If people just like decide to do it on their own, if you just assume that it's a it's just like a sign off kind of thing, so that is a problem. So you have to understand how it works. It's something called a heter iska. What is a heter iska? What is an iska? An iska is, rather than being a loan, it changes it into a partnership, that I'm allowed to invest money into, let's say Bruce wants to, start selling mezuzahs or something like that. So I'm going to invest in Bruce's business and say, if Bruce can't, he needs to buy, $5,000 worth of inventory, just random. So I tell Bruce, I say, listen, I'll give you $3,000 to buy the inventory, but then, the first year profit, I expect that loan back plus a portion of the year's profit. You'll manage the whole business, and I'll get a profit off of that. So that is mutter, right? We permit investments to take place, right? It can't just be a loan; it has to be an investment. So under that idea, we now head into we that forms the basis for heter iska. Now, Reisman also told the following story. He says regularly, because he wrote the book on it. A lot of people come to him with nervous questions, so two people will come in and say and start describing. He says, "Well, I'm going into business with him, and I'm investing in his company, and I'm going to give him X amount, and if he's successful, I'll get back this amount, and if he's not successful, so I'll only get this amount." And so we need to write a heter iska. To which Rabbi Reisman says, "You don't need to write a heter iska. That is an iska. Right? That is a partnership. That's a partnership. You're an investor. He's the investee, right? And he's the man. He's managing the property for you. That's mutter l'chatchila. There's no reason to sign any documents for that. That's totally okay." What we get into when we discuss we talk about it, the heter iska is as follows, right? I'm willing to invest. I'm not really investing in Bruce's mezuzah business. I want to give him a loan. I say, listen, you need money for your unit. I'll give you a $3,000 loan. I expect the $3,000 back plus whatever interest, plus 200. I'll expect $3,200 back, mm-hmm. right? So is there any way for me to make that okay, right? That sounds like a ribbis loan.
Right.
So, how is that different than the ISCA? In the ISCA case, it's a partnership, and I'm willing to suffer a loss. If Bruce is unsuccessful with his business,
right.
So I'm going to then end up losing. In this case, I'm not losing. I'm not taking a risk. I'm saying, you're going to have to pay this much, no matter what happens to your business.
So that
should be a problem, right? That's right. A loan rather than a partnership.
Right.
So how do we then make it okay? So if we shift it back to being a partnership, and say, okay, I'm willing to take a loss if you take the loss, but we can minimize the risk to me that there ever will be a loss. How do we go ahead and do that? So suggests, this is, you know, times the Rishonim already have made this suggestion. If I say to Bruce, listen, I said if there's a loss, I'm willing to take the loss, but in order for me to recognize there's a loss, I demand either that you have two witnesses come and testify before me exactly what the loss was, to the penny, or you can take a shvuah d'oraisa on a sefer Torah in front of a beis din. Or you can just give me the interest payment and we'll just ignore the details. Right? So generally, the person will say, okay, I'm willing to take that. Meaning, so that's the way the heter iska is set up. It's set up as, I hereby giving you $3,000. I expect, and we're in partnership together. It could be that the money will go up, it could be the money will go down. If the money goes down or up, I expect that you're going to come in front of the basin with two witnesses and give me exact testimony to the penny as to what it was. And you're going to, or you're going to have to take a shvuah d'oraisa rather than bring in two witnesses. You could hold on to a sefer Torah and take an oath and swear to exact penny as to what it was. Or we could just assume it probably worked out to about this amount of profit, and you'll pay me $3,200 worth of profit, $3,200 back for the $3,000 loan that we lent. That's mutter.
That's okay.
That's what we call. That's what we call a heter iska. Ribbis is only, and perhaps this is part of the hashkafa, part of the philosophy behind the prohibition of ribbis. Ribbis is when it is when it is guaranteed that I'm going to get X amount back. I give you $3,000, I'm guaranteed $3,200 back. Now, you could default on it.
What if there isn't a loan? What if you
want
to buy a house and yes,
hold on a minute. So I understand you're defaulting, you might default, but in terms of you paying me back, I'm guaranteed X amount. Once I enter risk into the equation, it no longer, it leaves the realm of being ribbis. So what we're doing here is, I'm setting up a risky situation for me. It is conceivable that he'll go and get two witnesses, right? But I'm making it much more likely that what's going to end up happening is that I'm going to get the ribbis payment back. That's the part of the heter iska. Just a couple of other details about it.
That is interesting.
Right? There's a couple of other details.
Opens up a whole new room.
And that is now, Bruce is being my manager, right? Bruce is my manager in the business. So he needs to be reimbursed for being my manager.
Right.
So in most heter iska forms, it says the investor, me, is paying the investee $1 for his work. And that's actually, and I'm supposed to actually give him, besides the loan I'm giving, I'm supposed to be giving him $1. People just, if people just do it on their own, they sign a heter iska and say, $1. Like, well, what do we care about $1? No, that actually, if not, then I'm getting ribbis. How am I getting ribbis? Because if I give Bruce the money and I expect this amount of money back,
right?
He's doing the work and I'm doing nothing. So I'm getting more than he's getting, in which case I'm the one who is then getting I guess I'm getting ribbis in that way, that he's doing the work and I'm not. So the way we alleviate that is, well, really one of two ways. Either I pay him $1 for his efforts, or $5 or $10 or $30 or $50, whatever it is, but I pay him an amount for that. Or we say the fact that he's getting more profits than me is because he's doing the work. Those are the two ways to alleviate that that issue. Okay. Now, in terms of also in terms of the returns, so they say that the amount that I'm requesting back has to reflect at least an optimistic version of what the returns are going to be. It can't be something totally unreasonable, which is an issue. He points out there's something called hard money. Anybody here heard this term, hard money? So
hard money.
That's like a loan shark. You know, you definitely need money, and right. So to lend to do this with a extremely high interest rate would be inappropriate. Would be usher, because it has to reflect some conceivable possibility as to what that the returns are going to be. Yes, Bruce, you want to ask about mortgages?
Let's say a person wants to buy a house, and they both personally to their mother-in-law. Gives them some money to buy the house, and she says, but you know, I'm on it.
So they need to have to risk it.
But there's no, it's not a business, though.
Why not?
What's the business? There's no business.
Oh, you're investing in a house. The assumption is that the cost of the house is going to go up. The value of the house is going to go up over the years. They point out, Rabbi Reisman, in a different shiur, it was a Monday night, we're teaching the laws of Ribbis for a couple of shiurim, and so listening to some of his shiurim to help out along the way. So he made a very interesting point that when, let's say I'm going through my stuff and I find out that, like, I see, lo and behold, in 1950, I borrowed money from Len. Right? So I borrowed $100 from Len. I never paid him back. So how much is $100 from 1950 worth now? Right? It's worth $5,000. Right? So do I have to pay him $5,000? The answer is no. The answer is, when we deal with ben adam lechavero, between a man, a loan between a person and a person, we don't take any of that into account. Inflation, deflation, interest, right? We don't, rate of return, we don't take that into account. I just have to go give him back $100. However, when it deals with ben adam lemakom, we do take it into account. Let's say I'm makdish something. I'm makdish a field. And the field goes up in value, and now I want to pay the, right? Whatever the value is now is what I pay, as opposed to what it was originally. It's the difference between, if I owe a person money, it's whatever money I borrowed to the amount, regardless of worth going up or down. If I borrowed money, so to speak, from a Kaddish Baruch Hu, I owe a Kaddish Baruch Hu money, so then we do take into account the rate of return. Interesting little nuance there. Okay. It's an interesting issue having to do with how to deal with the non-Jews. But the truth is, Rabbi Greenspan always wants me to end earlier on Friday. All right, so maybe we'll stop here. So, introduction to the laws of Rivas and the two hetirim that go along with it, which I think gives a better understanding as to what's going on in the prohibition itself. So, one is the corporation issue. Right, it has to be with individual. The borrower has to actually be an entity. It has to be a person as opposed to just an entity. And the other issue is this heter iska, that a partnership is okay, and you can often turn many of the loans into partnerships. When I was in Phoenix, there was a member of my shul, also his last name was Gross, who he was in the trailer park business. He owned trailer parks, and he would rent out space. And he had a few. I wrote a bunch of heter iskas for him over the years because he had tenants who were Jewish. And they didn't care where he's from. I mean, he needs to deal with them in an appropriate way. So there were a couple times over the years I had to. He had some fascinating kosher mishpat questions that came up, but these are some of them. It's a deal. Yeah, these are in meisim b'chol yom. People lend money, and you need heter iskas to go along. It's not a big deal. It just it's something that needs to be done. You can get them online. I mean, this book has them, the Laws of Rivas book has them. There's a couple of nuances in terms of what kind of deal is going on. But I go to all these Choshen Mishpat websites of different Bati Dinim have websites. They all have a heter iska form that you can just download.
And that's a whole different thing, but loans at the end of the Shemitah year or forgiven?
Yes. Right, how does that deal with a heter iska? So often it doesn't. Often, if this is really a partnership, it doesn't forgive partnerships. So yeah, how that falls into Shemitah's Ksafim, good point, I don't know.
Thank you, Len.
Well.